Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on August 19th, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. In this episode, we take you to the virtual Democratic National Convention to hear from some prominent South Carolinians. We continue to explore concerns over the Postal Service. We hear from a financial advisor on how to handle this now quieted bear market and more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's happening in your world. We are very interested and we would love to hear from you at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 2,248 deaths, and currently there are 107,274 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of August 19th at 4 p.m. Our most recent percent positive rate is 16.8%, and we're averaging right around 15% currently. Our 7-day average of cases is at 761 and is starting to tick up. Currently, 1,168 people are hospitalized with COVID-19. 293 patients are in the ICU, and 164 patients are ventilated across the state. The number of ventilated patients, however, continues to decline like it has 10 out of the past 11 days. So some good news right there. Don't you feel like you're back on the campaign trail while you watch the Democratic National Convention from your couch? Well, we kind of are. We got a big old politics section, folks, for the big old tent politics. Starting off, we got some real talk first, though. Me and several coworkers were planning for months to be in Milwaukee and Charlotte to cover the national conventions, with plans to bring you daily convention pods, live coverage on South Carolina Public Radio, videos online, and a unique This Week in South Carolina, and more. Alas, it was not meant to be. So instead, we're going to give you a chance to hear what several South Carolina Democrats who participated in the first two nights of the Democratic National Convention had to say. House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, the man who helped Joe Biden turn around his campaign by delivering a tectonic win that set Biden on the path to the nomination, spoke from the roof of the Dewberry Hotel in downtown Charleston Monday evening. That was the first night of the Democratic National Convention, and here's what Clyburn had to say.
I'm Congressman Jim Clyburn here in historic Charleston, South Carolina. 6 months ago, I stood not far from here and endorsed Joe Biden to be our 46th president. It was a decision I made with my feet firmly planted in this community. This community, where 80% of African Americans in this country can claim an ancestor who arrived on these shores in bondage, a few blocks from here, over at Gaston's Wharf. This community that is still healing from the wounds we received when a white supremacist entered Emmanuel AME Church and murdered 9 black parishioners as they studied the Bible together. The ground beneath our feet is seeded with pain that is both old and new. But from that soil, we always find a way to grow together. Earlier this summer, the city of Charleston removed a statue honoring John C. Calhoun, an honored advocate of slavery. And construction is underway on the International African American Museum at Gaston's Wharf. Much like the country as a whole, we are stepping out from the shadows of our past and beginning to lay the groundwork for a more just future. It won't be easy. We can only succeed if we move forward together. So we will need a president who sees unifying people as a requirement of the job. A president who understands the true meaning of community and how to build it through trust and humility. And with so many families experiencing loss in this pandemic, lost jobs, lost loved ones, and lost confidence in the president to keep us safe, We need a president who understands both profound loss and what it takes to bounce back. But more important than his firsthand experience with loss and hardship is his ability to translate that perspective into policy and solutions and prioritize hard-working people and persistent poverty counties over partisan politics or personal gain. That's why I stand with Joe and why he will always be an adopted son of South Carolina. Joe Biden is as good a man as he is a leader. I have said before and wish to reiterate tonight, we know Joe, but more importantly, Joe knows us.
Clyburn was not the only South Carolina Democrat to partake in the virtual festivities. Democratic Senate candidate Jamie Harrison was picked to do the delegate vote during the virtual roll call Tuesday evening. He was live from Clyburn's alma mater, South Carolina State University in Orangeburg, where he had a portrait of Clyburn's late wife, Emily, by the side of his podium.
South Carolina.
Mr. Chairman, I am Jamie Harrison, candidate for the United States Senate, speaking from the campus of South Carolina State University, the alma mater of Majority Whip Jim Clyburn and the late Dr. Emily England Clyburn, for whom its Honors College is named. This proud HBCU has contributed 22 general officers to our armed services. And tonight, I proudly cast South Carolina's 64 votes as follows: 15 for Bernie Sanders, and 49 for our next president of the United States, Joe Biden.
And North Charleston Senator Marlon Kimpson got to share his unique voice with the world Tuesday evening as he and a dozen other rising stars from around the country spoke different parts of a speech that was edited together for the program. Here are his talking points that we put together.
This year, all of us are on stage, and we have a lot to say.
When unemployment in North Charleston, South Carolina, a city I represent, has risen nearly fourfold, and evictions are putting families out on the street in the middle of a pandemic. When unemployment is the highest rate since the Great Depression, when millions of people have seen their hours and pay slash, Joe knows it's not enough to rebuild the economy the way it was before. We've got to build it back better.
And Kimpson, along with a few others, got to riff on the classic Biden hot mic moment when he called accomplishing the Affordable Care Act.
That's a big effing deal.
Now, some folks on Twitter, including Barstool Sports News Network, made some digs on Kimpson's twang, to which we say, y'all don't even know. You come to a Senate filibuster and then you tweet, okay? Just get y'all some brown liquor and hush.
Brown liquor.
Moving on, we have more from Congressman Jim Clyburn, who was recently at an Eastover post office on Tuesday to address concerns over cost-cutting measures implemented by the U.S. Postal Service, which many see as a threat to the financially strained agency ahead of expected record-setting mail-in voting this November. Here's Congressman Clyburn.
I feel very strongly that this issue is something much more than whether or not people are able to mail in ballots. Defunding the post office is something far more sinister than that. The post office is enshrined in our Constitution. And I always refer to the post office as being the thread, the holes, the fabric of our nation together. It is how people in rural communities stay connected to the rest of the world. Long before the internet, the post office was the connection the rural communities had. And I think that it is beyond cynicism to undertake any effort to cripple the operations of the post office. And so this is not about just voting to me. This is about how we stay connected to each other.
Clyburn said he wants to see ballot drop boxes across the state like they have in other parts of the nation, and something that the State Election Commission director is also recommending to lawmakers. Here's Clyburn talking about that and discussing funding with Meg Kennard of the Associated Press.
So I don't understand why we just can't make it convenient for people to vote. We ought to have ballot boxes in Estoba, Hopkins, put them there every post office.
Congressman, the State Election Commission says that those boxes cost $2,000 a piece.
That's what we're going to appropriate the money for.
Okay,
so they will have, if that's their only excuse, they will not have an excuse. Because the money is going to be appropriated. It's in our bill to do that. And I'll tell you something else. They've already got money to do it. They got money to do it. We put it in the CARES Act. The money is there. So that's not an excuse. If it costs $2,000, use the federal money you got to do it.
Clyburn's remarks came before controversial Postmaster General Louis DeJoy said that the cost-cutting measures would be delayed until after the November election. However, Clyburn has told media outlets that he is not reassured by that, and Speaker Nancy Pelosi isn't either. DeJoy is set to appear before a Senate committee on Friday, and House lawmakers are expected to take up a bill restoring the Postal Service to January operating levels on Saturday. And finally in this section, we have more on this topic from South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan, who has this report on how a combination of the coronavirus pandemic and the politicizing of the U.S. Postal Service is forcing a different kind of choice onto voters with disabilities. Do they risk going out among people to vote during a pandemic, or risk possibly having their votes not count?
Voters with disabilities face a lot of potential obstacles come election time, even with ADA-mandated accommodations in place. That's one of the reasons that disabled voters have always had an alternative, absentee voting. But that option is fast running up against the year 2020.
My spouse and I still want to vote absentee, but I'm not sure whether we should actually go into whatever office we need to go into hand deliver this stuff or what, but it's very scary.
Brad Morris voted absentee for the first time in June because of the coronavirus.
Because of my disabilities, I sometimes have trouble breathing. And so I'm the kind of person or a disabled voter who, if I were to get COVID-19, I expect to die.
Mail-in balloting was never the charged issue it is this year, when President Donald Trump has openly blasted the idea of voting by mail. And with drops in funding, a controversial restructuring of management at the U.S. Postal Service, and a wave of postmasters now telling Americans that they might not be able to process all the mail-in ballots in time this November, disabled voters like Brad Morris face an agonizing choice. Risk going out in public in a pandemic, or risk seeing their votes not matter. And Morris has a lot of company in South Carolina.
People think that the disability population is very, very small, when in reality, it's somewhere around 20% of the population.
Aaron Hare oversees voting and outreach for Protection and Advocacy for People with Disabilities Incorporated, or PNA, a nonprofit agency in Columbia. That 20% she mentions adds up to about 660,000 registered voters in South Carolina with some kind of disability, and not just the kind you can see.
We have people that have really bad post-traumatic stress issues and can't be in a crowd for it. A lot of them are, you know, disabled veterans. The spectrum is really, really wide, and it's a really diverse community, and it's much bigger than people think.
PNA's response to the dynamic in play is education, namely that there are more choices open to voters with disabilities in the state than crowded polling places or the mail.
Obviously, by mail is the very safest way. However, if you have a disability and you don't have one of those underlying medical conditions, you can go and vote absentee in person.
Absentee in person allows voters to drop off ballots at a designated location. Hare says it might be inconvenient for some disabled voters to get to a physical location, but absentee in person is by nature a form of early voting that offers a distinct advantage for COVID-vulnerable voters.
I guarantee you the crowds are going to be less than on Election Day. You know, I've voted absentee in person because I work on Election Day, and that's one of the things that will exempt you. And it's never crowded. I mean, I don't think I've even run into one person.
Additional options could be on the table for voters with disabilities if the state legislature heeds recommendations submitted to lawmakers by the South Carolina Election Commission. Those include placing drop boxes to collect absentee ballots and altering curbside voting.
Allow curbside voting to take place at designated locations instead of at every polling place.
Chris Whitmire is with the Election Commission. He says high turnout for the June primaries led to several voters lining up to vote curbside, even though many were not qualified to do so.
And that gets in the way of people who really need it. So you could have curbside locations at various places throughout the county that they're not the polling places assigned for the precinct where they're located, and it would be set up to efficiently process curbside voting.
Hare says she would also like to see state lawmakers offer electronic ballots to voters with disabilities, the same ballots available to South Carolina residents who are away from home or in the military. State lawmakers are expected to convene in early September to discuss options for voting in this November's general election.
Thanks, Scott. And we're going to keep up on that topic about voting safety and security in our next pod. And also, we'll catch up with Senators Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott, as well as Congressman Joe Cunningham, to hear what they all had to say during the South Carolina Chamber of Commerce's virtual Washington Speaks event. Tune in Saturday. S&P 500 closed at 3,389 on August 18th. What does that mean? Well, it was only up 0.23% for the day, but it capped the end of the shortest bear market on record, making up from a 34% drop in March. Now, despite there still being COVID concerns out there and millions of folks unemployed, investors saw bright spots in the housing and retail sectors, according to the Washington Post. And I'm sure a lot of those new day traders probably helped out too. Let us know if you're investing, if you're one of those Robin Hood bros, we want to know. Let me just tell you, if you want the real money, folks, that's trading derivatives. Come on. That's where the true gamblers go. I mean, investors. It's not gambling. But Mike Switzer spoke with Wes Johnson, a certified financial planner with ACT Advisors in Charleston, about what the market is showing in contrast to what folks may be seeing on Main Street.
The market and the economy are definitely saying different things. Some would argue that the market has gotten ahead of itself, and maybe it has. The market is a leading indicator, like you mentioned. If you remember back in March, the stock market crashed before we shut down the economy, before the unemployment numbers spiked, and before all the economic numbers collapsed. So it's entirely possible that the market will mostly, if not completely, recover before things begin to feel normal again.
After most recessions, the stock market takes a while to recover, sometimes years. Is this case going to be different?
We won't know for a while when we actually exited the recession, but it will most likely be one of the shorter recessions on record. Our economy went from chugging along at a healthy, sustainable growth rate of 2 to 2.5% per year to crashing into the biggest negative GDP number we've ever had in the second quarter. And while that number was big, it was not necessarily a surprise because we essentially turned our economy off like a light switch. We all hoped that we could flip the light switch back on and everything would go back to normal, but that has not been the case. In reality, it's more like turning on a dimmer switch and gradually turning the economy back on. But as bad as the GDP number was for the second quarter, there's a good chance the third quarter GDP number will be the biggest increase we've ever had. We're truly in uncharted waters here, so it's hard to compare the current situation to past recessions, because this one is so different than anything we've seen before. Another unique characteristic of this recession is the fact that we have some very distinct winners and losers in this COVID economy. There are some companies out there in some industries that are having their best year ever, while many parts of the economy are barely hanging on, if they're even hanging on at all anymore. Historically, when the economy slows down, all areas of the economy feel the slowdown, albeit to varying degrees. But I think this speaks to how resilient and how innovative we've become as a society.
And speaking of innovation, we're all hoping that that leads to a vaccine sometime soon. Do you see the market turning one way or the other, the economy turning once this vaccine is announced? Because it is sort of anticipated, right?
Yes, it is. So that's another unique feature of this recession that other recessions didn't have, and that is a potential cure for the cause of all of our problems. We work with a number of physicians and folks in the pharmaceutical industry, and most of them feel that the chances of us getting at least one vaccine approved by the end of the year are pretty darn high. By the end of the first quarter next year, we could have millions of Americans vaccinated. That being said, there's no guarantee that we'll get a vaccine that quickly or that the effectiveness will even last that long. But you know, there are a number of vaccines in the testing phase, and several of them have shown promising results. So there's light at the end of the tunnel, I guess, for this recession, whereas most recessions don't have that light at the end of the tunnel.
Speaking of that tunnel, how do you recommend that our listeners manage their investments to get through that tunnel until we see the light?
I think the two biggest things people need to remember is we will get through this eventually. It may be months, it may be years, nobody knows, but we will get through it eventually. And number two, probably more importantly, is no one can predict the stock market. You know, it's easy to convince yourself that the market is about to crash or skyrocket. You know, for the past 4 months now, plenty of really smart people in the investment world have been calling for a second pullback in the market, but it just keeps not happening. So if the professionals who have all the resources in the world available to them can't consistently time the market, then the average investor or even an above average investor is probably not going to be able to time the market either. So our advice is not very exciting, but it always works if you stick with it, and that is to stick with your investment strategy, rebalance periodically, and eventually we will all get to the other side of it.
Thanks, Mike. Check out the South Carolina Business Review at southcarolinapublicradio.org. And please forward all hot stock tips to gjackson@scetv.org. We had a lengthy politics section, so here is just a brief medical update. I want to share with you all some information from our state epidemiologist, Dr. Linda Bell. In a recent email, Dr. Bell said that children and teens need to be up to date on their vaccines as they head back to school, even if they're attending virtually. This message comes as health officials see a reduction in routine pediatric vaccine orders and administered doses during March and April. Dr. Bell said, quote, "Vaccination is one of the most successful public health interventions in history for reducing disease spread and preventing complications and deaths from vaccine-preventable diseases. With COVID-19's prevalence across our state, we need to keep our children healthy and safe at all costs. And we must use the vaccines that medical science has afforded us to help prevent illnesses like mumps, measles, chickenpox, and whooping cough," quote. Yes, definitely. Fully support that. Get your vaccinations in. And the hepatitis A vaccine is a new requirement for children for the 2020-2021 school year. You can find a list of required and recommended vaccinations for school and childcare on scdhec.gov. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's happening in your world. Are you going to work? Are you back for school? Are you attending school online? What do you prefer to do? We want to know. We're very interested, especially as schools are going back, how parents are handling this and how students are too. So please give us a call, 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, what you're doing in these dog days of summer. You know, what you're doing. We want to know. Hey, this is the part of summer where I don't know. I get a little bummed.
This is the dog day of your intro right here.
I'm just dogging it right now. Well, I mean, just like, you know, you're like,
Ask me the question.
I know. I'm going to keep talking for a minute. You're just excited for school to start, but I just hate to see the summer end. Oh, gosh. So brutal.
Anyway,
let me get back on track here. Stop peering into the mirror of my life. AT, do we have any voicemails?
Oh, well, great question. We absolutely do.
Let me tell you about the dog days first again. Let's just circle back.
Let me just circle back and touch back on the dog days. We got a call here from a first-time caller. So
awesome.
Let's roll these dang old tapes.
Hi, this is Catherine calling from Aiken, South Carolina. I have been on paternity leave for the past month and have been at home with my 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and now 1-month-old baby. So obviously with 3 kids under the age of 5, we have not been going out much anyway. I just wanted to tell you guys that I really enjoyed your special episode last week from the front lines. I work as a nurse, and several of my family members also work in healthcare. And just really appreciate you guys telling those stories and making their voices heard. So hope you all are staying well. Have a great day.
Catherine, thank you so much for calling and congrats with the new baby and all three children. Wow, that sounds like a lot going on in that household. I'm glad you made time to call us. We appreciate that for sure. And then again, thank you for being a nurse and your family for all you guys do, especially during these difficult times. Like you said, there's a lot going on with nurses and medical professionals out there. And thank you for the kind words and just glad we got to tell those stories.
How do you even have time to listen to the pod?
I mean, seriously. Respect. We appreciate that for sure.
Squeezing us into sketch.
So I still have not watched Hobbs and Shaw. It's on my list. I'm going to watch it Thursday night.
Hobbs and Shaw update. Gavin is still
going on.
I just not watched.
I've been watching the DNC coverage every night. So I've been hung up with that. I've been just watching. I'm just mainlining PBS NewsHour. Just loving Judy Woodruff and her coverage. Just such
Judy's the OG
stuff.
Boss.
She is
for
just
sure.
Such. Can I say badass? She's a badass.
Yeah. Meg said it. You can say it.
Okay.
Meg sets precedent. Meg is it. I got it.
So I've been watching that. So between that and reading, I have to finish a book. It's just been super busy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a bad morning. No reason. I might be officially old today. Mm. I don't know. For no reason, I just woke up and my back is killing me.
Mm.
And it's like, what the hell did I do? What did I do to deserve
Maybe
this?
Maybe it's just some like late onset, you know, soreness from golfing recently.
Hmm? I don't know, man. This sucks. I'm dying here. There's nothing I could do.
As your medical consultant, unlicensed, not licensed in any way of capacity.
Purely homeopathic,
yes.
But like homie, like a bro, like HOMIE.
First of all, I don't know how your essential oil situation is looking right now, but get some of those.
I've been bathing in rosemary oil.
I'm just saying, my go-to, back me up, everyone, Tiger Balm works on everything. I use it anytime.
I call it Tiger Lube. Caitlin and I call it Tiger Lube.
it's but, really.
I don't use that. Caitlin
uses
it.
For topical use only.
Yeah, it's made from fresh tigers.
Yes, Tiger King.
Pressed tigers. But I really don't know what to do. I've just been stretching. I haven't taken anything. No topical action.
I just advised you.
My homeopathic advice. Yeah. Thank
and then,
you so
much. Yeah, we'll get some sage. You'll be walking in no time.
I actually just watched this thing on Netflix called Unwell It goes into all, behind the scenes about, and the history of essential oils and basically just shines a light on what is really going on and how it's kind of a Ponzi scheme meant to prey on people.
Mm.
And it was pretty good. Caitlin and I both, we really, really liked it. You should check it out. And there's other ones that I haven't watched yet, all about like ayahuasca and bees or something. Bee sting therapy. I don't know.
That works for arthritis. I remember
bee sting therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. It helps. I don't remember what it was, but I remember my neighbors were beekeepers back home, and they had bees, but they would usually do that too, arthritis.
There's one for fasting for you.
There we go. I've been doing it for 2 weeks, loving every minute of it.
I haven't eaten in 2 weeks. I feel stronger than I've ever felt.
I have been eating. I eat during my 8-hour window. Super easy. Everyone that I told to do it is loving it. No one would ever lie to me about it. They're all telling me
no
that
one
great.
Would ever lie to me. No.
But it's been great. And then you get to eat, and you're like, oh, I'm kind of, yeah. But
you're over food. You're regressing back to pre-AT Gavin, where it was literally just for sustenance.
I know. I'm still just for sustenance. Like, I was mad today when I was telling you I want to get one of this, a sub at this new place that's opening in Columbia in Five Points, Enzo's.
Enzo's, check still, it out.
Yeah, check it out. Their Instagram is mouthwatering. Cannot wait. They're just doing delivery right now. They're going to be doing pickup and in-person next week. And I was bummed that they're only doing delivery today because I had my mind set on a sub. And then I was like, fine, I guess I'll just go home and have scrambled eggs.
Do you put any...
I put some hot sauce on it there.
Do you put milk in your eggs?
No, I don't find the need to do that these days. I'm not trying to make more. I'm not cooking for a big family here.
You just put like a little plop. And it's better.
I could use my half and half, but I mean, I use my butter.
I mean, half and half would be decadent.
Well, I don't have milk. I have half and half.
You have to. I mean, you have
how can
to
you,
use butter
how can you
in the
do,
pan.
How do you do this if you're lactose intolerant?
It's so little that it's a negligible amount. Okay. It's literally like a tablespoon of
milk. So you're almost saying that I don't even need it.
That little bit of fat plays a vital role in getting fluffier eggs.
Oh, okay. Well, see, the thing is, I'm not actually... So I slap a tortilla on top. So I'm not really whisking
you're
it.
You're doing... You I watch
whisk
that
it,
show.
I whisk it, and then I put it... Yeah, and then I mash it, flip it. Hot sauce. Chomp.
Drop down, flip it, and reverse it.
I'm not even going to try and make any... I don't even know if I can say the abbreviation for that song. Can I even say...
We're not talking. That's a Missy Elliott.
I know, but
reference.
I'm using that as a. It made me
you
think.
You
want
to talk about? You want to get into
Cardi
WAP.
B?
You want to get into
know,
WAP?
I don't know what I should say here if I'm allowed to say anything.
Just take it out. Just take it out. Yeah. Take it out.
I'm gonna go out before we get in trouble. But again, I want to give you a convention coverage note. You can get your fill of the DNC and the RNC next week from PBS NewsHour Monday through Thursday online and over the air. Each day, NewsHour will host a 10:30 a.m. preview online on social media. And then you can catch the NewsHour at 6 p.m. And then pre-convention coverage begins at 7. And then 8 to 11 will be special coverage of the convention. So check it out. Keep up on what's going on. It's been very interesting to watch for sure. And thanks again for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on iTunes or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. We love hearing from you. And stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And continue to support your local newspapers. They need it. They do. And consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at $40. And if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport. A lot of great programming there that your donation helps support. So check that out as well. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. You know, there are tectonic plates that are underneath us at all times.
We live in a subduction zone that's under, okay?
Okay, here's the tip.
Picture this. Mariana's Trench. Mariana's Trench.
And we are floating over magma, okay?
Magma is under, lava is over.
And you don't call it hot magma because all magma is hot.
You sound so stupid, okay? Guys. I don't want you to sound stupid.